This is Melange à deux, a Vienna podcast. Herzlich willkommen. Hi, everybody. This is Frau Batsby with
Herr X.
And you are listening to Melange à deux, a Vienna podcast. We're having a rough start to the morning trying to get this started. Yeah, this is part two of Alma Mahler. A couple weeks ago, we did part one, and then we had a filler with the third man.
Yep.
And you're back from New York. Did you have a good time?
It was great.
Yeah.
Got to see an eclipse.
And otherwise, kiddo had a terrible cough. So that was fun.
Yeah.
And it didn't help that I was reading about diphtheria and scarlet fever in the Alma Mahler book while he's coughing up a lung.
Oy.
It made me a little nervous. Sources for the Alma Mahler story are in part one of the podcast.
Yes.
And what else is new? Oh, today we're going to go check out
The Spear of Destiny.
The Spear of Destiny. That's what we're going to talk about for next week. It'll be a filler episode. Anything else to add?
No.
Last night we binged Baby Reindeer. Whew, that was a show. It's on Netflix. That was incredible.
Yeah. It's really good.
A lot of trigger warnings for people, but it's amazing. I think that needs to win all the awards.
Yeah.
I won't go into details, but I would highly recommend that you Google it before you sit down with your family to watch it. It was so good. So incredible. All right, well, I guess we'll get started on part two of Alma Mahler. Just a little recap to remind you and me about what happened in part one. So Alma Mahler from Vienna, her first kiss was with Gustav Klimt, the artist.
Yes.
Then she married Gustav Mahler, the famous composer and conductor. They were married for 9 years until he passed. They had two daughters together. One had died from diphtheria, scarlet fever, Maria, and the other daughter's Anna. And after he dies, she has a 2-year relationship with Kokoschka.
Yep.
And she kind of convinced him to go to war so the relationship could end. And he gets really injured, severely injured, but he recovers. And he has a really hard time getting over the relationship. And apparently he even made a life-size doll of her at one point that he used to have conversations with.
Yes. As one does.
And they actually had stayed in contact the rest of her life. I think at one point he was supposed to see her, but because she felt like she had aged, they didn't see each other again. But I think they were kind of friends towards the end of their lives. Also at this time, she's having a relationship with Gropius, Walter Gropius, who when she was married to Mahler, she was having an affair with Gropius. And then Gropius was mad because she started a relationship with Kokoschka. Gropius has also been fighting in the war, but she really pursues Gropius, and they end up getting married. So she's married to architect Walter Gropius, who would later go on to help found the Bauhaus movement.
Right.
Yeah. Why don't you tell me a little bit about the Bauhaus movement? The panic.
Right. Everybody knows
the
about
House of Bau. To be fair, I don't know much about the Bauhaus movement either, but it is a movement of art and architecture in Germany.
Suddenly I have like flashbacks to a dream where I'm in a spelling bee and I'm given a word that like everyone should know.
Spell bee. So Walter and Alma end up having a daughter together who they name Manon.
Manon.
Manon, who's named after his mother. Manon is from...
The craft.
Manon. And she has now two daughters, living daughters. At this time, while she's married to Gropius, she has met a poet, writer named Franz Werfel, who's originally from Prague. He's Jewish, and this is how she describes him in her diary when they first meet. Quote, a stocky, bow-legged, somewhat fat Jew... sensuous bulging lips and slit watery eyes. And last.
I wonder what your first description of me was.
Not that. Definitely didn't call you Jewish. Yeah, so also to explain, there is a lot of anti-Semitism in her diaries with Alma Mahler. And as we said before, it was a different time. Also, it wasn't great what she says. I'm not excusing any of her writing, but I think this was just, she's getting caught up in the movement at this time. So as she's having this relationship with Werfel on the side, she's still married to Gropius. He returns from the front for Christmas in 1917, and she realizes she's no longer attracted to her husband. That New Year's Eve, there is a party at the Bristol Lounge, or Bristol Hotel.
Okay.
Which is one of our favorite.
Yeah, favorite spots.
Favorite spots. It's got this great restaurant called the Bristol Lounge.
Yeah, nice fireplace.
It's gorgeous. It's, we're going next week.
Yeah.
My uncle's in town. So the war is raging, and she's struggling, and, you know, she talks about having no household help. Look, she came from a very wealthy family.
Where's the help when you need it?
Yeah, she's foraging for food. I mean, Vienna is just a mess at this time. She ends up getting pregnant with her husband while she's having the affair with Werfel. One night, Werfel's visiting her. They have relations, and she goes into early labor. She's rushed to the hospital. The boy does survive, but not for long. Serious issues. And he ends up dying later in a hospital. And he had, like, water on the brain. It's just a really tragic story. So as she's recovering, Gropius and Werfel, her husband and affair partner, reach an understanding for a little while she's in the hospital, just so that she can recover and get through it.
Gropius, an awkward hospital visit.
Yeah, and Gropius apparently also really admired Werfel's poetry. He admired his work. This is Europe, okay? I think people are more advanced. I don't think you'd be so understanding. Love your work.
Hey, listen, call me old-fashioned.
Thanks for snipping my wife. So at this time in Alma's diaries, you can see that she's really conflicted. She doesn't know who she wants to be with. She's not sure. I know. She's a complicated woman, all right?
What kind of rom-com business is this? I can't choose.
I don't. This is the furthest thing from a rom-com. So then a few months later, as she's recovered, Gropius, her husband, decides to give her a proposition. He says he'll have full custody of Manon and she can live with Werfel.
Okay.
She says no. She wants to be with her daughter. Finally, after going back and forth, Gropius finally agrees to divorce Alma.
Okay.
The divorce is the 11th of October, 1920. And at the time, the best way for people to get a divorce
was
that he has to admit that he had an affair.
Even if he didn't?
Yes. So he pretends that he had had an affair with a sex worker and that she caught him in a hotel. I don't know why the man has to say it, but maybe it has to do with, like, reputation and maybe her keeping custody. I'm not sure exactly what the rules were. And at the time, he actually has a girlfriend. Like, he's moved on, but he is nice enough to kind of do that for her. So after a couple of years of dating Werfel, she's not really that enamored with him. She goes back and forth a lot, with her emotions for people. So she writes in her diary, "He has shrunk to a small, ugly, obese Jew of the first impression." Close quote.
Oh my god.
Yeah, how about inside thoughts? Don't write these things down. So, at this time, together she has bought a place in Venice that requires a lot of work.
Okay.
And they have a great time in Venice. She falls in love with him again. Especially when he starts writing novels.
Aha.
There's money in there. So Alma's also responsible for really pushing his work and getting it published. She smartly, in the 1920s, negotiates a publishing contract to be paid in Swiss francs, since the Austrian currency is so volatile. He actually starts to become a huge literary success. And he doesn't hang out with his buds at Café Central as much before, and they kind of blame her. They consider him a sellout and spending all his time with his wife.
La-di-da.
Who do you think you are? So in January 1925, they head to Egypt and then on to British-controlled Palestine and Israel. Werfel was a cultural Jew. And just to explain to people what a cultural Jew is, why don't you explain it?
you know, it's like you're into Broadway, you like writing show tunes.
You like a little schmear on your bagel.
No, but cultural, I mean, I guess in the sense that because Judaism is like kind of unique in the sense that it's a religion and it's also kind of, it's an ethnicity.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have people who are not religious, but, you know, identify as Jewish culturally.
Right.
That's what I would see it as.
Larry David.
Yeah. Cultural. Oh, Larry David, 100%.
I mean, that is an ethnicity. So while Werfel was a cultural Jew, he starts to feel closer to Judaism during the trip. He used to ignore Alma's very anti-Semitic remarks, but now he's starting to get a little annoyed by them. So, and in the 1920s, as communism is starting to become more popular, especially among the Jewish population, Alma wrote some pretty nasty things about Jews. She also said they shouldn't be in politics, but they are, quote, excellent intellectuals, artists, financiers.
Just put them in boxes.
Yeah, well.
No. For listeners at home, I just want to clarify.
This is how you got canceled. It's okay. My wife's Jewish. It's totally cool. So at the time...
Well, that was Alma's probably like her thing. Yeah,
oh, yeah, it was. 100%. Both of her husbands, Mahler and this one, not Gropius. So at the time, there's crazy uprisings in Vienna because there's, you know, communism's coming into town, worker strikes. There's a lot of, a lot of riots. And anti-Semitism is also on the rise. The crazy economic issues. You got to find a scapegoat. Easiest are the Jews that you think are doing well. Also, culturally, a lot of Jewish people are more left-leaning in terms of communism and socialism, maybe because of the kibbutz idea, which is my personal nightmare.
Yeah.
not farming. Are you crazy? Alma, because she grew up in a very... kind of wealthy family after her father became successful as a painter for Rudolph. She's more right-leaning and definitely a monarchist. Mm. Werfel, who is a writer, is very left. Yeah. And around 1928, she actually becomes friends with Mussolini's mistress.
Oh.
Because they're in Italy a lot. Not the one that was murdered with him.
Right.
At the end of the war.
The other one, of course.
The other, I think he had a couple. Because what is so funny, you know that every time you've met like an American Italian, it's always their grandmother or grandfather spat on the body of Mussolini and his mistress.
Everybody was there.
Everybody was there. All of Italy was in there. around this time in 1928, she also has a terrifying flight over the Alps from Venice to Vienna. Like, they think they're going to crash. Mm. And this is when she starts to become a little religious in terms of Catholicism. I think because she's trying to fill some void that's existing in her life. Alma is also friends with the very famous Viennese author Arthur Schnitzler. He wrote the book Eyes Wide Shut, which was then made into the movie. At the time, his daughter commits suicide in Venice by shooting herself on a gondola in front of her husband.
I mean, there's a flair for the dramatic.
I mean, the Viennese. Listen, if you need help, contact people. But that is nuts.
It's like there's a Northern European-ness to Vienna, but there's also the Southern.
There's a dramatic. Yeah, that's why they love opera. So after many years of being together with Werfel, 9 years of pretty much dating, they finally get married 6th of July, 1929.
Hmm.
She is 50 and she's miserable about being 50 because this is a woman who has always been considered beautiful. Hmm. And, you know, she's so smart, but also she knew that with her looks, she got attention. And now when she's getting older, you know, but she still has an incredibly engaging personality. And what's also interesting is that for 9 years, Werfel and Alma were a couple. And at that time, that was considered, you know, completely sinful or not whatever. But everybody kind of accepts it. But I think this is because they were high society and people didn't really care as much. And also, it was post-World War I where I don't think people really cared as much.
Yeah.
The country was kind of trying to build itself up. They didn't have time to say that you're living in sin. So after they get married in 1929, they go to Palestine and Egypt and Lebanon and Syria. There, Werfel, when he's in Syria, is absolutely shocked and devastated at the sight of Armenian orphans working in factories, because this is post-Ararat situation, the genocide. So it haunts him, and he writes a book about it later. And yeah, he just has like this vision of these kids that are just, you know, malnourished, yeah, working in factories in Syria. So in the early 1930s, Alma hosts salons. And salons are these get-togethers, yeah, where people are, yeah, we should totally have one. We can talk about Vanderpump Rules.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on Joey Gorga's new look?
Now that he shaved his head because he's not taking Propizia anymore. So it's filled with interesting people. Jake from State Farm.
How do you pronounce Propizia?
Propizia. Is it Propizia?
I think so.
I don't know. I've just seen the
Listen, I don't use it. The results speak for themselves.
I like that. It sounded like a brag. So then she's getting older, and one critic describes her figure as, quote, simply a bag of potatoes.
What?
I know. Could you imagine, like, do you think anybody went into Truman Capote's home and they're like, his buddy was like a sack of potatoes?
See, kids, back then there were no microaggressions. They just...
they just said it.
It was just pure aggression.
It's awful. So at this time, Hitler wins in Germany, and at one point, Alma writes in her diary, quote, and therefore I am for Hitler, close quote. She crosses it out later. Nobody. Yeah, I'm like, maybe use a little white out.
Write over it like six times.
I am not for Hitler. So around this time, Alma starts to go back to deeper Catholicism and becomes very close to a priest named Hohlsteiner. He was 38 at the time, and she actually has a crush on him.
Okay.
And he's not anti-regime, but once the Nazis took over power, the Catholic Church was also considered kind of verboten. Right. So history lesson, friends. If you let a totalitarian regime take over and you think you're going to be okay, you probably won't be as well. So just, that's my history lesson for today. Protect democracy, all right?
So, at all costs. I feel like there's something for today.
Yeah, yeah, that's an important lesson. So one May evening, Werfel's books, as well as from other Jews, get burned in front of the Berlin Opera House because he's Jewish. And yeah, that October, he comes out with his book called The 40 Days of Musa Dag. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's about the massacre in Armenia. Mm. So remember, Werfel had seen the orphans. The Austrian parliament is dissolved March 1933, and Dollfuss, who I had briefly talked about one podcast before, establishes a one-party dictatorship. Alma is torn about her allegiance and believes the communists are causing too much strife, but then at the same time, she isn't happy with the growing power grab. Yeah. Well, so in April 1934, Alma, Werfel, and her 17-year-old daughter Manon are in Milan. Her other surviving daughter, Anna, is on maybe her third husband at this time. Anna's a sculptress. She's a very interesting person, very left-wing. Wow. Like, she's traveling third Europe. Husband. Yeah, she's had a complicated...
It's getting into Larry King territory.
Yeah. Oh, Alma territory, like her mother. So she has a very complicated relationship with her mother. Manon, the 17-year-old, is absolutely beautiful, and Alma sees her as completely angelic. Like, she's just this perfect specimen of a daughter. One day when they're in Milan, Manon, you gotta stop playing with whatever you're playing with.
Yes. It's coming in through the mics?
I feel like it is. It's coming through to me.
I tend to fidget.
I'm gonna get you a fidget spinner. So Manon walks through the square in Milan, and a friend of Alma looks concerned as he sees her. And Alma realizes that his daughter had passed 8 months earlier from polio. And he sees the daughter, and there's this look like, I recognize this in her. A year later, Manon dies from polio.
Oh.
Yeah, and she's devastated. And they describe it in the book. I'm not going to go into details, but it's vaccinate. It's absolutely awful. So she's wrecked. Like, she's already lost three kids. She's lost Maria. She's lost the son in the hospital. And now she's lost Manon. So she ends up selling the house in Venice. And in December 1934... they go to New York, and Werfel's book is about the genocide is published there, and he's lauded by the Armenian community. Like, they just love him because he's actually, I think, one of the only to talk about the genocide. Mm-hmm. So in February 1936, they return to Vienna. Not a great time. As Hitler is making moves towards the Anschluss, Jews start to leave Vienna. Her stepfather, Alma, so remember Carl? He's the one that used to always hang out with the family?
Yes.
And then married her mother once the dad died? He pledges his allegiance to the Nazi party. Mm. his daughter, her half-sister, also does too. They actually end up committing suicide when the war ends. The Soviets are coming to Vienna because they so at the time, Verfel and Alma are in Capri and having a good time relaxing. And on February 12th, 1938, it's very clear that Verfel cannot go back to Vienna. So Alma goes back and grabs as much as she can. So she buys, she grabs Mahler's transcripts. She actually even has a painting from Edvard Munch, the one who does The Scream. But then I think she tries to have her stepfather sell it. It's very complicated. So they make it to Switzerland, and they have the option for American visas, but Verfel still wants to hold out because he's European. He doesn't...
He's like, this will blow over.
This will blow over, like, you know. But then they realize they aren't safe, and they make their way to France. In August, they meet somebody called Varian Fry, who was a representative of the Emergency Rescue Committee, which is supported by Eleanor Roosevelt at the time. And what it does, it was trying to get out Jewish musicians, scientists, writers, politicians, intellectuals, and artists, as well as any politician that was anti the Nazi party. So they have a harrowing trip through Europe. Like, they're pretty much refugees going across the continent. From France onto Barcelona onto Lisbon, it takes them 6 months. And at this time, she's in her 50s.
That's a long trip.
It's a long trip.
Listen, I had an eight-hour trip and my back was seized.
You flew economy plus.
Because everyone is asking me, what, were you scrunched up in your seat? No, no.
No, you had a delightful plane.
I had full leg room.
Yep.
Yeah, so how many months?
6 months.
Oh.
Yeah. And I think they are able to also get his...
And how old is she by now? She must be in her mid-50s.
Mid-50s, yeah. Or even, late 50s. And she has suitcases with her filled with all these original works, but she loses it at some point. Everything. And it reminds me of Hemingway. Remember the story?
Right.
His first wife, she leaves the suitcases in the Vienna train station and loses all his stuff. Back up your work, guys. Put it in the cloud. So she loses her luggage, but then at one point she ends up finding it again. So it's a miracle. By September, they finally make it to New York. They live in New York for a little while, and then on December 29th, 1940, they decide to move to Los Angeles. They become friends with Marlene Dietrich, the actress, because she was an incredibly outspoken critic of the Nazis, as well as the writer Erich Maria Remarque, who wrote the book All Quiet on the Western Front. Yeah, that's going to disturb you thinking about that movie. The new one.
The remake disturbed me. I do have to watch the original one. I heard it's quite good as well.
Yeah, you came out of the bedroom just haunted. Yeah, if you ever want to think war is good, no. Watch that film. So as they're there, Verfel continues to write while in L.A. They struggle being foreigners because they're... Yeah. I think there's even one quote where one of her husbands like, I don't want to live in America. They put ketchup on their meat.
Between the grilling of meats.
Yeah, they just... Freud did not like the barbecue.
We call them savages.
Yeah.
Grilling their meat on open fire. Not boiling it like a normal person, making tough shit.
Yeah, it's so funny. Yeah, I forget. I think it was maybe, was it Gustav Mahler or Verfel? One of them was like, I don't want to move to America because they put ketchup on their meat. So they, they definitely struggle being, I mean, imagine Viennese moving to LA.
Yeah.
I mean, completely a huge culture shock. But they do have a strong group of friends who are all exiles from Germany and Austria that they start to hang out with. At this time, Verfel, her husband, starts getting very ill. And you can also see in her diary, she goes back and forth to like really loving him to like hating him. It's just back and forth. I think she's just never happy. So Verfel does die 26th of August, 1945.
Okay.
And Alma is actually completely devastated by this because she didn't love him. In her own little way. She then decides a few months later to go to New York for a little while. Then in September 1946, post-war, Alma actually goes back to Vienna to visit. Her house has been mostly destroyed, but she does find some letters that are very valuable from Mahler and Verfel. She ends up getting so frustrated with Austrian bureaucracy, still filled with Nazis. So she's trying to get her artworks back, all these things.
Right, right.
One even chides her for having married two Jews.
Oof.
Yeah. She's frustrated and pretty much disgusted with Vienna, and she ends up never returning. Even though she loved it so much.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, it's post-war too. I mean, it's a crazy time.
But it's crazy, yeah, because everyone just assumes at the end of the war, you know, that everything changes and there's still cultural,
sorry.
You know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think also Arnold Schwarzenegger talks about how, you know, the people...
The broken men.
The broken men, yeah, is incredibly powerful. It's, yeah, war. What is it good for?
Absolutely nothing.
So, yeah, so then she continues living in L.A., and her daughter, Anna, and granddaughter, because her daughter has had a child, move in with her. But they butt heads constantly. Her daughter actually ends up getting a professor job at UCLA. Mm. And she becomes a very famous sculptress. One friend tells Alma that she should move to New York. It's more European.
It is. I always say the border of Europe ends at the Hudson.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. So at this time, she also works on a memoir about her life. Because, I mean, she knew just so many incredible people. And she was actually a talented composer. But she also makes sure that the publishers remove anything she's written about the, quote, Jewish problem. Well, I think also...
To be fair, she crossed out the
I stand with Hitler. No, I think also, like, if I'm not going into too many details about the things that she was writing or, you know, about that time, but she talks about once she talks to a nurse who's working in Vienna at the time, and because people, the exiles, are talking about the concentration camps and all these things, and her nurse friend is like, no, no, it's fine. They're being taken care of. What are you talking about? Like, there's all these things that she's hearing different stories, but the Jews that are in exile are like, no, we are hearing these things that are happening. And I think once she found out, and they do say in the book, when she finds out about what had happened, she realizes that bigotry and anti-Semitism, not a great thing. So in 1951, she moves to 120 East 73rd Street, Lenox Hill.
Ooh, it's nice. Good hospital there.
Good hospital. So she is Jewish.
Yeah, yeah. She's right there.
She's right there.
Lenox Hill Hospital.
I looked it up. It looks gorgeous. Oh. It was it's a like a townhouse in a way, but she had two stories. And she makes her apartment, even every room has a theme, like the reading, like books room and the music room. And it's just filled with things she's collected over the years. Yeah, I wish they had made it into a museum. I'm sure now it is broken up into many little apartments.
Lenox Hill, the Upper East Side, that is a good neighbor.
So she ends up having a much quieter life as she's getting older, but she has tons of visitors because I'm sure she also had a bit of a drinking problem at one point.
A little bit.
But she has the original transcripts of Mahler and Werfel, and she's interviewed by newspapers often. I mean, she's just such a character. In August 1959, she celebrates her 80th birthday, which was celebrated at the St. Moritz Hotel, which is now the Ritz-Carlton at Central Park.
Oh, okay.
We should go check it out. Yeah. It doesn't look anything like it did before, but we will go.
We'll put it on the Ritz.
We'll have a coffee. We'll share a coffee. In 1960, Leonard Bernstein created a Mahler festival, and to which she was invited to. She loved Leonard Bernstein. She thought he was incredibly talented. And yeah, by the fall of 1964, Alma had suffered some strokes and she was struggling. And on 11th December 1964, she passed away.
At what age?
She was 85.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Her memorial was at the Frank E. Campbell Funeral Chapel on Madison Avenue. You know that really famous one?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's where John Lennon, Jackie O, Judy Garland, and Notorious B.I.G. had their... Wow. It's the most famous funeral home. And the reason why it was so famous, because it's like over 100 years old, was that instead of having wakes at people's homes, they would do it at the funeral home. That was what they came up with, this idea.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah, because I'm like, I don't want this in my house.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want people. I'm grieving. I
don't want to. Well, you got to sit Shiva then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I can do it somewhere else. So her remains were brought back to Vienna, and she's buried in the Grinzing Cemetery, close to where I used to live, beside her daughter, Manon. And that is the end of the crazy life of Alma Mahler.
That is a crazy life.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. I mean, you get a glimpse. That's why I really don't like when people do censor books and things like that. You do get a glimpse into how people thought back then. I mean, it could be someone who's like, fine, okay enough with Jewish people that they'll marry them or things like that, but still use, you know, these words in a certain way. Yeah. So you read Fitzgerald, you read Hemingway. They both hung out together and they both had problematic characters.
Yeah, you know? And I think that's a very important thing to keep in literature, to understand
exactly
how people evolve, language evolves and changes, and how people need to be a little bit more cognizant of terms they're using. But I think, I don't like the censorship of books. I think it's problematic to do. And I think people shouldn't still write books like that. No. But I think it's, yeah, keep it in. She's such a fascinating character. I think I had gone into more detail in the first part because the first part was really crazy. I mean, you think about Gustav Mahler and the fact that he converted to Catholicism to work.
Yeah.
And he still wasn't accepted.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also, as we've talked about before, Jews at that time, there wasn't a huge amount of orthodoxy. I mean, you did have definitely places, but they had been Austrians for 200 years. Yeah. This was not a... So if you think you're safe, no matter how long you live somewhere, this is how Jewish people think. We're like, we're never safe. Keep your gold and silver hidden.
Yeah. Be ready to go.
Have an escape.
Go bag was definitely a Jewish idea.
Oh, 100%. Well, I remember when the pandemic hit and I was going to move with kiddo to your place. And I remember like packing my bag and just like, it's traumatizing because you're just like, oh, this is, yeah. No. So, yeah, fascinating character. I would love to see a movie about her. I think it's funny because a lot of the anti-Semitism stuff didn't come out till later. It was because kind of everything was whitewashed. But the book that I read about her, I think, did a really good job, especially in the foreword talking about the problematic things she said. But we still should cover somebody who led a very extraordinary, interesting life.
Very.
Yeah. I think also she had problems with relationships.
Yeah, and it's interesting to study these types of people. But she was definitely drawn to, talented people.
100%. And then a friend of mine was saying, like, you know, all her energy of her talent was spent on these people. And so she had to take... And I think that was what led to her unhappiness. If she had been at a different time and could compose and be successful, then maybe this would have been a very different thing.
Yeah. A lady ahead of her time.
Yeah. Deep thoughts. All right. Well, that's it for now. This is definitely shorter than I expected. That's okay. We got plans today.
Yeah, we got plans.
Got to go see the Spear of Destiny. We're going to do like the Nicolas Cage, like, I'm going to steal the Declaration of Independence. Steal the Spear of Destiny. What's it called? Like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe.
No, please follow us on Instagram, Frau Batsby, for pictures. And then also, if you can follow on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, that's great for numbers. We are doing great. Thank you, everybody. I think we got about 38 different countries listening to us, which is amazing.
Yep.
Thank you, Mauritius.
Shout out, Mauritius. Well, how many do we have? We have one?
Yeah, it looks like somebody has listened to us in Mauritius.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it could be somebody on vacation.
Yeah, cool. Thanks for using the Wi-Fi. Otherwise, anything to add before we say bye-bye?
No, just very excited to see the Spear.
The Spear of Destiny. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Thank you so much and talk to you later. Bye.
Ciao. Bye.